Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
He's back, War Rocket Ajax, to bring back his body.
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. It's the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always, my co-host, he's got a body like an hourglass, but he can give it to you anytime, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you today?
Oh, that's so nice to tell me when I'm 1 year older, Chris. Thank you. It's my birthday.
Is it your birthday?
Well, not the day we're recording this, but the day it goes up, it's my birthday.
Okay, I knew it wasn't your birthday today.
Well,
it is. I always think your birthday is later than it is because I always give you your present at HeroesCon.
It is my birthday today, Monday,
the day that the show exists.
Monday. But I'm sure there will be things said about birthday that will be nice, and I'm going to thank everybody in advance for those, so I don't have to talk about my birthday a week late.
Now, Matt, I have already gotten your birthday present. I bought you your birthday present last week. It has not arrived yet, and you won't know what it is until I give it to you at HeroesCon.
Okay.
But since it is today, your birthday, would you like me to tell you what I got to you, or do you want to be surprised?
I want to be surprised.
Okay.
I do.
Then let me just tell you, you are going to love this useless piece of crap I bought you.
There are a few things I love more than useless pieces of crap, but enough about me, enough about me being born 32 years ago today. Let's talk about our awesome guest this week. We're having an old friend of the show back on. She's not old, but she's been our friend for a long time.
She's been our friend for a while.
She's been our friend for a long time. Kel McDonald is coming back on the show this week.
That's right. Kel is going to be here to talk about her new comic, which is being kickstarted right now. You can head over to Kickstarter and back it and get a great graphic novel from one of my favorite people. It's called The Better to Find You With, and it is about future werewolves. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome and you're going to want it. But I cannot wait to talk to Kel about that.
Yes, and we will do that very shortly. But before we do, Chris, we've got some business to take care of. We have the great pleasure of thanking our newest Patreon patrons.
Now, these are people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and decided to give us as little as a dollar a month to help keep the lights on, get me some health insurance, help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. And we are very glad to have you supporting us and supporting the show.
And here are some of the people who are doing just that for us. The first person has the fanciest name I've ever seen. Asmus Birch Jensen.
That is an amazingly fancy name. You know, you set the bar really high, and you delivered. Thank you, Asmus.
Robert Kelly.
The senator from the X-Men?
That's what we say every time we read his name. Look, we make an R. Kelly joke.
For obvious reasons, Senator Robert Kelly has been on my mind quite a bit lately, so thank you, Robert.
Fair enough. Guess who else has already just pledged something? Charles!
I honestly thought you were taking a dramatic pause before you said Xavier.
Well,
there's got to be somebody named Charles Xavier, right? Who just hates comics.
There's probably also an Eric Lynchair, but...
Oh, but is there a Magnus?
Magnus!
Okay. Thank you, Charles, and get out of my head.
Ben Hamlin.
Oh, thank you, Ben.
And those are our newest Patreon patrons. Thank you to all of them. We really appreciate your help.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate the help of Patreon backers. And we do have an update, the quarterly art piece that is promised to backers. We are working on getting that out to everybody. If you have a suggestion on artists that you'd like to see, if you're an artist and you'd like to you know, maybe get us to commission you to do something for our Patreon backers, drop us a line, send us an email, recommend some folks, recommend some friends. We'll probably be talking to a lot of people about that at HeroesCon, but I cannot wait to start getting that stuff out to you. And of course, there's my art that goes out every week whenever I finish it.
If you would like to send in one of the suggestions or volunteer, not volunteer, we'll pay you, to do some art, you can do that at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Okay, Chris, it's time to do some checks and wrecks. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Fallout 4 was announced, and Jesus is real, y'all. Oh, Fallout 4. Matt, it's coming.
It looks really good. My one joke about it on Twitter was that I was convinced until the very last second of the trailer that the player character was a dog.
Okay, listen, that would have been amazing, though.
It would have. Like, I would love to go through the wasteland as a dog.
Like, can you even imagine? Like, there should at least be DLC where you play as the dog. I'm super excited about Fallout 4. If you have listened to the show for any length of time, you've probably heard us talk about how much we love the Fallout series of video games. They're great. I love the aesthetic, the kind of, you know, what if the 50s never ended? Like, what if it took the apocalypse to end the 50s? And then, you know, you have a weird Mad Max meets the 50s style aesthetic going on. I'm really excited about the setting because Boston has been hinted at and mentioned in previous Fallout games. I just think it's going to be great, and I'm excited about it. The only thing is, it is going to be everything I can do to not buy this game when it comes out and just wait for all the DLC to come out. Because the thing about the Fallout games, at least the last two, is that the DLC is generally pretty big, pretty important, and significantly changes the game. So it's going to be one of those things where I'm like waiting. Like, I have to wait a year for that game to come out, and then I'm going to have to wait 2 years for a Game of the Year edition.
I mean, I played New Vegas. Like, I bought New Vegas new and just got the DLC as it came out, and that seemed to go okay. The thing about Fallout 3's DLC, like, the DLC that lengthened the game considerably, I had already played so much of that game and explored the map entirely and done everything that it kind of didn't matter to me anymore. Like, I kind of didn't care about being like, oh, I can go up to level, you know, 50 or 60 or whatever now. I didn't even really matter.
First of all, it was level 30.
Okay.
I just can't imagine playing Fallout 3 without Broken Steel. Like, I really can't. I feel like that ending would have been really unsatisfying. I feel like, you know, we've talked often about how I like to get to the point in games. Like, I love the early game, but I also love that tipping point where you suddenly become more powerful and you are suddenly the master of the game. And Broken Steel, like, makes that happen in a very real way for Fallout, because most of those situations are for a maximum level cap of 20, and Broken Steel takes it up to 30.
Right.
But so then, you, like,
but
are
then
significantly
also,
more powerful.
But then also Broken Steel has those, what were the albino rad scorpions?
Yeah, they've got the albino rad scorpions.
That just the bullet sponges.
Scorpions, not really an East Coast thing, by the way.
Not really, no. But I'm definitely looking forward to the game. The thing that most excited me about Fallout 4 in the trailer was just the bright colors of it. Mm-hmm. Something, like, there were certain colors that popped where I was like, oh, that looks weird. But then I was like, no, that's just a bright color, and you're not used to seeing them.
yeah. Especially in Fallout, where, you know, we just came through New Vegas, where everything is brown.
Everything is brown, yeah.
And it's like that, you know, look, it's an aesthetic choice, but also it makes sense. Everything has been rusting for 200 years after the apocalypse in the desert, so it makes sense that it would be. But yeah, like, I am really interested to see, like, I would like to see a brightly lit Fallout game.
It looks like this is going to be one, which I think is going to be interesting and hopefully really cool.
Although my excitement is a little bit tempered because I certainly liked Fallout 3 story-wise, more than I like New Vegas. And I certainly like New Vegas more than I like Skyrim, a game that I, like, quit in disgust 80 hours in. So,
Skyrim easily had the most disappointing ending of any game. In Skyrim, a dragon tells you you're cool and flies away, and that's it.
On paper, that sounds awesome.
But Oblivion had a man turn into a dragon and fight a giant statue. And there's like a giant cool explosion, and that's the end of that game. Oblivion definitely had Skyrim beat on endings. I think the ending of New Vegas is pretty good, where you get to choose your ending. Yeah. I'm kind of hoping for more of that from Fallout 4.
Yeah, but you do get to choose an ending, but like my problem with New Vegas, and this is something we could talk about for hours and hours, so we'll move on in a little bit. But my problem with New Vegas is that I feel like the player character, even if you pick the one of the three paths that makes you the most important character,
yeah,
I feel like the player character is very much incidental to the plot. Like, that NCR versus Legion fight is going to happen regardless of what you do. Like,
that's true.
I was talking to some friends about this the other day, and it's like, yeah, I snuck a gun into Caesar's tent and shot him in the face, and nothing changed in the game.
Yeah, because
which is really frustrating.
Because somebody else just takes over Caesar's Legion, right?
Like, yeah. Which, you know, makes sense that would happen, but also he's set up as this very important guy, you know, single figure, and they're like, oh yeah, without him, the Legion will fall apart. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really love the story of Fallout 3, so I hope you get to play a more significant role in the plot of Fallout 4 than you did in New Vegas or Skyrim, where it didn't feel like anything that I did mattered.
Yeah.
The question is, will I give in and get it when it comes out, or will I be able to wait?
I'll probably buy it pretty soon after it comes out.
I kind of feel like I have to, or just stay off Tumblr for 2 years. But Matt, what are you up to this week?
Well, in addition to today, the day this goes up, Monday, being my birthday, I will have spent the weekend, by the time this goes up, at the Memphis Comic Expo. I mentioned it on the show a little while ago, but this is the weekend that it's happening, or last weekend it happened. There are going to be a lot of cool people there. Chris Haley, Kurt Franklin, our pals from Let's Be Friends Again, Erica Henderson's going to be there. Kyle Starks is going to be there. Bonita Cirino is going to be there. So I'm envisioning...
Erica Henderson's going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm envisioning it being a very fun time. And there's been talk about a pool party.
Oh.
So...
I came really close to just kind of, you know, looking at the map and going, okay, how far is it to drive to Memphis? Because I would really love to hang out with all you guys. But
yeah,
we got Heroes Con in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you should come to Memphis Comic Expo next year. It's a good one. It's a good one.
Next year, I will be there.
Jerry Lawler drives his Batmobile around. It's great.
Does Jerry Lawler own a Batmobile?
Yeah. He is the owner of a Batmobile.
That's makes so much sense.
He brought it to last year's show. I assume it will be at this one too. And then the other thing that's going on with me, I mentioned it last week. I sort of made the hard sell last week, but the Copernicus Jones Kickstarter is continuing apace. The day that they're recording this, the fourth day of the Kickstarter, we have crested 60% of our goal.
That's awesome.
Heading toward 2/3. I think that's a pretty good start, pretty good first 4 days. So hopefully it's still doing well. If you would like to contribute to it, I'll put another link to it in the show notes this week. But to everybody who has contributed to the Copernicus Jones Kickstarter to get those first 6 issues in trade paperback, I appreciate it greatly. I'm expecting some really stellar reviews when the reviews come in for my Kickstarter video, by the way, in which I portray a noir detective.
I really enjoyed it.
I was expecting more response to it initially, but I'm assuming it'll come in over time. All right, those are our checks. Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend this week?
Well, Fallout 4 has kind of rendered this moot, but, I mean... we're not going to be playing it for months, if not years. So,
true.
I mentioned that I was really kind of looking for a game about that early game Fallout experience, or that early game Tomb Raider 2013 experience, where you're doing a lot of scrounging, you're doing a lot of, you know, careful playing to survive. And I had some GameStop credit, so I walked across the street, and I picked up a copy of The Last of Us on the recommendation of both you, Matt Wilson, and Laura Hudson. And I am not... I have no idea how far into the game I am, which is nice. Like, it's an interesting thing. I assume that I'm not that far, because you are supposed to go somewhere that is described as out west, and I am in, Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Philadelphia? I'm in Pittsburgh, I think. Which is not very far west at all. But it's, you know, there's a lot of talking in that game, a lot of acting in that game, so I don't know if it's one of those, you know, 14 hours of gameplay ones, or if there's more to it. But yeah, either way, it is definitely a game that is exactly what I wanted to play, to an almost extremely frustrating extreme. There are few games that I have played, because, you know, like, if you listen to the show, you know what we like to play. Like, we're, you know, Assassin's Creed fans up to the last couple games. We, you know, we like Fallout. We like your Arkhams. I like those first couple Arkham games quite a bit. This is a game where there was a part where you have to, like, the goal of the mission is to take out, six guys, and maybe three of them are armed. And I was like, oh, damn it. I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
Because the piece of wood that I need to hit them with is about to break, and I have 4 bullets. But yeah, it is exactly that kind of scrounging. You know, like, I've talked about how much I loved that experience the first time I played Fallout 3, and this is a game that, you know, there's no getting around that experience. Like, it is extremely limited resources. You know, things break constantly. You keep finding things, and it's like, oh, you can maybe use these to improve your weapon, but, like, I found maybe 2 workbenches in a solid day of playing the game, and you can't really improve them that much. So,
yeah. And even if you improve your weapon with, like, barbed wire or something, you can only use that barbed wire for a certain number of hits before it's gone.
I'm enjoying the story. I had the, like, look, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, because that game has been out for several years. When the opening cinematic played, you know, the little intro level, and you meet Joel and his daughter, and you find out her name's Sarah, I was like, oh, I thought there was a different name. I thought her name was, like, Ellie or something. Okay, well, I guess it's just Sarah, whatever. So I was not expecting her to get killed, like, immediately. Like, I was really upset by that.
It's upsetting. It is an upsetting introduction to the game.
Yeah, and then I was especially upset when the next thing that you get is a title card that says 20 years later. I was like, oh, hold the phone, y'all. Here is my impression of literally everyone in the game. You go get that girl out of here. You get that girl out of here right now. That's my impression of everyone in The Last of Us. I'm having a good time with it. I'm hoping to get more into it this weekend.
Again, my description of that game is a girl blocks a doorway that a man is trying to get through.
Yeah, there's a lot of me, like, saying to my television, God damn it, Ellie, get up the ladder. Because it's like, it's one of those games, you know, I've talked about this with Fallout, and I've talked about this with the Grand Theft Auto games. It's, you know, it's one of those things where you want to put yourself in the shoes of the character and play it as the character would. And so, like, mechanically, like, for all intents and purposes, I'm kind of operating under the assumption that Ellie is plot relevant and therefore cannot die. Like, I know that there are missions, there was that guy, Frank was his name?
Yeah.
Like, when you're on missions with him and he gets in trouble, like, you do have to rescue him or he will die and you will fail the mission because he's dead. But, like, that hasn't really happened that much with Ellie, and I feel like I can probably, you know, bail her out if I need to. But it's also a thing where it's like, if I'm Joel, like, she's got to go up the ladder first. Like, I'm at least going to be that protective of her. So there's a lot of me, like, kind of waiting, like, hoping that the clickers do not notice me while I'm going, get up the ladder, Ellie. But yeah, I'm having fun with it. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is an APC 6-plug battery backup.
Oh, that's a good thing to have. I got one of those.
Well, I bought one this week with some Amazon credit I had because we were in the middle of recording Movie Fighters this week, watching Left Behind World at War, and my power flickered and my computer went off and I freaked out because I thought we had lost everything that we had recorded. Luckily, I was able to find a fix to recover that audio. GarageBand actually keeps the audio in a folder, even if you haven't officially saved it. You just have to know where to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me scared enough about losing something like that, that I was like, that's it. I'm getting a battery backup for this computer and everything in my office. So I immediately went to Amazon and bought that battery backup. And, like, nothing has happened to make me have to use it yet, so I don't even know how well it works. But the peace of mind that I have as we sit here recording this, that if my power goes out right now, that I won't potentially lose the 20 minutes of recording we just did. Golden. Lifesaver. Yeah. I could not be more appreciative of that.
Battery backups, if you're, like, not using a laptop, like, if you were using a desktop for anything, like, get a battery backup, guys. Like, because thunderstorms happen. Every now and then a transformer will explode. I don't know if that happens everywhere, if just it happens in the South.
It has happened here a few times. Like, I will tell you this. Like, there have been, like, gusty, awful windstorms in Chicago when I lived there that would not cause the power to go out. The power here will just go out for nothing. There will be no thunderstorm. It'll be sunny and nice, and the power will start flickering, and I'll be like, why? What is happening right now?
It's those mountains, brother.
It's those mountains, I guess.
Those mountains.
It took a lot of work, a lot of mountain man work, to get those power lines to your house. All right, those are our recommendations. Chris, it's time now to talk about some comic books that came out this week.
Oh, that's good, because I love comic books.
Where do we want to start, Chris?
Well, how about we start with a comic by a friend of ours?
Well, that would be probably La Mano del Destino number 4 by Gonzo.
Jay Gonzo, you may, if you are a fan of the show, you may know him as the artist who designed our new Movie Fighters logo, the Shaw Brothers logo, as well as a Clytus Media logo that I don't know if we've used. And we actually came to know about him through a comic that he does called La Mano del Destino, which is a fantastic luchador comic. It's really, really great, and this is honestly, I think, my favorite issue yet. It just went up in his online store last week, so you can grab that and give it a shot. It looks great, too. I love the way that he ages it,
yeah,
even for the digital release. So oh, yeah.
It looks really good, and the art is fantastic. There's just an establishing shot of a Colosseum where a match is happening that's gorgeous. Like, I looked at that for a long time. It's just that drawing of that Colosseum. You know what it is? Or you know what it feels like to me, this whole series? But particularly this issue.
What's that?
It feels like it's a luchador comic that's secretly a kung fu comic.
It feels like that in a lot of ways. And this issue especially.
Yeah, because the senseis get involved, right?
Yeah, there's sensei stuff going on. There's you know, people being betrayed by their relatives.
Yes.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about this is that you see La Mano del Destino, the main character, who is a luchador who lost his mask and his honor and then took a new identity as the Hand of Destiny. You see him working his way up the ranks, like Punch-Out style, which is hilarious. Like, you literally see him with the neighborhood championship, the state championship. Yeah.
He's got the barrio championship. He's the campeón estado. And then he's the national champion.
And then he finally gets his shot at the world championship. And Gonzo draws all these belts, and I love these belts.
Yeah, they're great.
The Campeón de Barrio belt, like, if he doesn't have one of those made, and he's a listener of the show, I believe, so listen, if you don't get one of those belts made for your table at conventions, like, what are you doing? Because it's a great design. I love it.
Yeah, I just I like how the belts progressively, they get bigger, but they just get fancier in their design.
If they get more eagles.
They get more eagles. That's exactly what they get.
I would say, like, also, great thing about this issue, even though there are three issues before that do a lot of setting up and that are very, very well worth reading, you know, I'm a huge fan of them. If you are curious about this series, just pick this one up because you can jump right in with number four and you'll be able to get everything and you'll be able to have a pretty good time. The guy with the flower shaped like a hand on his mask is good. The guy with the mask that looks like a skull is evil. That's all you need to know.
Mm-hmm. Where can people get this issue, Chris? Where can they get the digital comic?
We should probably put a link in the show notes, but I think you can find it at Castle and Key Publications.
That is correct. That's where you can get that, and you should. All right, let's talk a little about a DC book that came out this week. There were a whole slew of semi relaunches.
It's the DCU.
Yes, the brand new DC universe of sorts. And there were quite a few issues that came out this week that had an interesting feel, everything except Justice League. And one of them was Action Comics number 41, which I was super impressed with. Now, this is the same creative team that's been on this book for a while. It's still Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter. But it's a very different direction, with a depowered Superman that everyone knows is Clark Kent, riding on motorcycles and fighting street punks, wearing t-shirts, one of which is a Superman t-shirt, the other one is like an environmental Save the Trees t-shirt that's great. And it's such a fun story. It's a different thing for Superman. It kind of does that thing in a Superman comic, like, well, what if we depowered him and we just had him, like, ride around on a motorcycle instead of fly? And there's absolutely potential to screw that up and make it bad, but this does not do that.
Yeah, I mean this in the best way possible, but this honestly feels like a comic where Superman read Zero Year, and he was like, oh, I should, like, cut my hair, I should get a buzz cut and ride around on a motorcycle. That sounds cool.
That is very accurate, yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. And, you know, we have both been fans of what Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter have been doing on Action Comics since they came on, really. Like, that zero-year tie-in that they did about a young Clark trying to save a ship from the hurricane is probably their best single issue. But yeah, this issue does something. It does the Superman getting in touch with his humanity thing, and it does it in one page, and it does it really well. Because it's, you know, Superman talking about, like, oh, you know, I don't get hungry. You know, I don't get thirsty. I don't, you know, I drink coffee, but I don't feel caffeine. And instead of using that as, like, you know, Superman needs to go get in touch with that, it's just Superman being like, oh, yeah, this is a thing that I haven't done before. This is, you know, like, when you're hungry and you eat lunch, it's great.
Yeah.
And I really like that approach to it.
And he's like, oh, wow, food is good. Like, boy, I like food. And then there's a great scene after that where he goes to his old neighborhood and people are celebrating him. Like, a lot of people are not celebrating Superman, but the people in his old neighborhood are, and he's kind of at this block party. And it's really good. Like, you get that scene of, like, people saying how much they appreciate Superman, and it's not cloying, and it's not overly sentimental. It's not, like, hammering it into your head. You just get the sense that, like, hey, the people in his neighborhood actually like him.
Yeah, and I like that we get a new double L. We get Lee Lambert, yep, the firefighter. I like her a lot.
Spoiler warning for the last page of this comic, what we're setting up is Superman versus cops.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to talk about. Like, with all due respect to any listeners that we may have in law enforcement, now is kind of the perfect time for Superman to wrap his knuckles up with his cape and go fight riot cops. Like, that's kind of where we're at as a country, I think. And it's really, like, I'm interested to see where this goes, because Pac especially has a really good handle on Superman. He did that really good issue about Superman talking about, like, yeah, you know, it felt good to beat up these bad guys, but, like, is that really how I need to be using my power? So I would love to see him, like, I don't want to see Superman, like, plow into all these riot cops and throw them into Hobbs Bay. You know, I want to see him stand up to them in a way that works for Superman, depowered Superman.
He's going to just remove the corruption from them.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see.
Now, there's one more thing about this, and that is that we've got Superman in a t-shirt.
Yep.
Which is the second time that we've had Superman in a t-shirt since 2011.
Yep.
You know, the Grant Morrison Action Comics, you know, the Grant Morrison Rags Morales Action Comics run, that is Superman in a t-shirt for about, you know, eight, nine issues. And I don't know how it is for everybody, but I think you and I have had this conversation, and Chad and I have had this conversation, where it's like, yeah, that should be Superman's costume now. Like, I didn't like it when I first saw it, but the idea of Superman being a guy in a Superman t-shirt and jeans and a cape, like, really works if you're going to have him be the champion of the oppressed. And it should be, you know, like, not the tucked in black Superboy Young Justice t-shirt, but like the blue t-shirt with the logo on it and the cape, I think really works for Clark Kent.
Yeah. And it shouldn't, I mean, it's certainly a preferable to the armor costume.
Yeah.
That was the new 52 costume.
Yeah. And you know, again, that's something that Chad called Lord Superman. You know, it looks like something Dr. Doom would wear, to be honest. Superman is, you know, the common man in the t-shirt and jeans, the son of a plumber, like, really works for me. So if that's what we're kind of going back to for this, I mean, look, I want to see Superman in a costume, and, you know, preferably in his costume that I grew up with, because that's objectively the best, obviously. But if Superman in a t-shirt and jeans and, you know, steel-toe boots is enough of a thing that people are going to want to go back to it, in the way that, you know, we always want to go back to Batman without the oval, you know, Batman in the black and gray costume instead of the blue and gray costume. If Superman in a t-shirt is going to be that, then I am kind of completely okay with that.
Yeah, me too. All right, we got to hurry through. I want to say quickly that another DC book that came out this week was the Omega Men number one. Our friend, our former boss, Andy Khoury, is the editor on that book, and it is good.
It's really good. It's Tom King, who's Tim Seeley's co-writer on Grayson, and that dude, for still being in his rookie year as a comics writer, Tom King's friggin' amazing. Like, he's doing great.
Yeah, it's a nicely complex book. All right, Chris, you wanted to talk about Transformers G.I. Joe number 7 quickly before we wrap up this segment.
Yeah, when I talked to Tom Scioli for an interview that we did, and he's going to be on this show in a couple weeks, probably talking about just, you know, comics that he's into. He mentioned that this was going to be a quieter issue, a smaller issue. It was going to focus on a smaller cast and not necessarily involve the big conflict between all of the Transformers and all of G.I. Joe. And technically, it is that. Technically, it is mostly a Scarlet solo story. In reality, it is not that at all. In reality, he does not know what quiet means. Like, it is exactly what you think it's going to be when that guy tells you, oh yeah, this is the quieter issue. It is Tom Scioli doing his version of the two-part episode that Steve Gerber did of the show where Shipwreck wakes up in Springfield 10 years after G.I. Joe beats Cobra and disbands. It's that. And so it's Scarlet in Springfield, undergoing psychotherapy because she thinks G.I. Joe is real. And there are people talking, you know, about how, no, Scarlet, G.I. Joe is a toy line for children. It's a toy and it's a cartoon. And at one point, her psychologist, who is Dr. Mindelbender, says, "And what's Cybertron?" And she says, "A nonsense word invented to tie together several unrelated robot toys into a single advertising narrative." It's great. It's weird and creepy and unsettling, and when you find out what is actually going on, it's fantastic, and then it just keeps going. I love it. It is one of my favorite issues of the series.
All right, that's our comic segment. Now, Chris, we need to get to our interview with Kel McDonald, so let's do that.
Yeah, let's do it. Joining us for the program this week, we have a returning guest, a good friend of ours, good friend of the show. You will know her as the writer and artist of the kickstarted graphic novel, The Better to Find You With, as well as the writer and artist of Misfits of Avalon and Sorcery 101, and the writer of an issue of Angel and Faith that just came out last week. Kel McDonald is back. Kel, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just been working real hard on all the comics.
No, look, I have been to your apartment. We have hung out. I have never seen you not working. Like, the only time I have seen you not working is when you and I walk to a restaurant to get pancakes. Like, that's it.
Yeah, that's a good summarization of my life. Though I did just get a PlayStation 3, so I am taking breaks to play Skyrim now. So
you got a PlayStation 3?
Yes.
Oh man, like that is good news, because if you want games that are 2 to 5 years old, Matt and I have recommendations.
We sure do.
Oh, good, because right now I have Dragon Age and I have Skyrim, and granted, how much I play video games, those will last me a good few months. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We actually talked about Skyrim earlier in this show, so I kind of only want to talk to you about Skyrim now, even though you have a Kickstarter and multiple projects that people can buy.
We can talk about Skyrim.
All right, let's talk about Skyrim a little bit. Now, I do not want to taint your Skyrim experience.
Oh, I've played most of Skyrim already. I think I'm almost done with it.
Okay. I got like 75 to 80 hours into Skyrim and quit it in disgust because I realized I hated it.
Kel, I'm just going to...
I love it, so...
I'm going to give you a warning. Earlier in the show, I gave away the ending to Skyrim. So, skip over that part.
I already know how it ends, and I don't care about spoilers, so... Yeah.
A dragon talks to you. That's that's how it ends.
Yeah. So I have completed the Warrior Guild, like the companion quest. So my character is a werewolf, because of course.
Of course. I was going to ask.
Then I finished the Mage's College, which I think is the most boring quest in the game.
That's a hard race.
There's a lot of the quests in the Mage University where it's just listen to this guy talk about magic and make sure that you follow him closely, so you can't just, like, hit X and then walk away while he talks. You have to, like, move your guy to complete this walking tour.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of other quests that are, go find this book. I need this book. Go get it.
Yeah, but at least in the find the book quests, you kill a bunch of people, so that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I completed the Thieves Guild.
Thieves Guild, yeah.
And I completed the Assassin's Guild. I finished all the Forsworn, like, rebellion stuff. I have most of the demonic artifacts. I've basically done everything, except I need to finish the main story, the Civil War, and the 2 expansion pack stories. So,
I think this conversation just made me realize why I hated Skyrim, because all that talk of guilds, like, that is just a game about doing jobs. That is just a game about learning a trade.
It's about murdering folks. I really, really get satisfaction from that slow motion kill cam of the arrow going through a guy's face when you're, like, sneaking around and, like, trying to sniper people.
Now, Kel, let me ask you a quick question. How do you feel about post-apocalyptic settings?
I know that you're going to recommend Fallout.
Yes.
I have not played any Fallout. I went with Skyrim first because I had played Skyrim
before. Because you can't be a werewolf in Fallout.
That was not the deciding factor. It was basically I had played Skyrim very briefly because my roommate had it, bought it, and then did basically what you did, only she gave up much quicker.
I'll tell you this: you can be a vampire in Fallout, but
oh, you can be.
Here's my question for you, Kel: how quickly did you give up on reading the books? Because there was a part of me that was like, I'm going to learn the lore of this world. I'm going to read these books.
I have not read any of the books.
Okay. Then you gave up on it even faster than me. But it was very quick. And I was just like, I don't want to read these books.
Listen, this game is a device to murder people, so.
Well, I wanted to, when I was playing Skyrim, I wanted to be a well-read gentlewoman assassin slash wandering murder hobo. So when you get your house in what is it, Whiterun is the name of the town?
I have a house in every town, so
you're all over the place. You've got secret families, all that stuff. But yeah, I had like a little bookcase, and I spent so much time like placing books on the bookshelf. I was like, oh yeah, I'll find these books. I'll have a book collection. That was my Skyrim experience. Then I realized, wait, did I just kill like 40 people trying to get someone a spoon? Is that a thing that happened?
Maybe. I know you kill a bunch of people to get a drum.
The population of the Skyrim just steadily whittled down.
Yeah. No, that's what Skyrim's for, killing a bunch of folks.
Now, have you also played any of Dragon Age, or are you just sticking with Skyrim till it's done?
I'm going to finish Skyrim, and then I'm going to bust into Dragon Age. I got all three, so I'm going to start from the beginning.
See, that's what I should be doing. Like, I should have finished Inquisition before I started on another game, because I know that it's going to be really hard to go back to it, and I always do that whenever I stop a game in the middle. But I really wanted to play something else, which was not a slight against Dragon Age. I like Inquisition quite a bit. I hope you like going to that one town in Dragon Age 2.
Oh, I've seen Dragon Age 2. Like, I've watched someone else play, so I do know that there's that one town.
Yeah, there's that one town. But, and this is the thing people don't tell you, that one town also has Varric. And
yeah, Varric's no, Varric's great. I know a lot about Dragon Age for someone who has not played it.
So did you just, like, find a deal on a PS3 and go, okay, here we go. I'll jump on the last generation.
Basically, I hadn't played any video games that weren't The Sims the entire time I was drawing Sorcery 101. So, The Sims, I don't know if you know this about The Sims, but it is impossible to play because it keeps breaking. It is a broken game. If EA decided to make a Sims game that functioned and didn't crash every 5 seconds, I would give them all of my money. But that seems beyond their power. So I needed something to replace The Sims.
Well, Skyrim and Dragon Age seem like they're kind of as far from The Sims as possible. Like, in terms of what you're doing in the game, like how they're built.
There's not a whole lot of thinking involved in The Sims, and the same with Skyrim.
That is true. You wait for the marker to turn red, and you hit a button.
Yeah.
So what is your preferred method of combat in there? Are you doing ranged? Are you doing like swords?
I'm doing all bows and arrows, except I maxed out my bows and arrows, so now I gotta like level up all this shit I don't care about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing that I was confronted with in that game. Although I did like the little screen with all the constellations. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I like that. I maxed out like and got all the skills for archery. So now I have that like time stops while I'm trying to aim my arrow. It's pretty rad.
What is your schedule like? Because I know you are someone, and this is actually something that I've talked to you about, something that I really admire about you. Like you get up in the morning and you make comics all day.
Yes.
Until you go to sleep.
That is what I do. Yes.
So what is, like, are you going, like, okay, I need to take a break to reset my brain. It is like, it's 6 o'clock Dragon Age time.
No, it's actually less frequent than that. I play until I draw comics until my wrist hurts. And then because my wrist needs a day off, I play video games.
Well, that's not going to help your wrist.
It does help because it's a different type of motion.
Like, I always, I guess
that's actually part of why I got the PlayStation, because the controller is easier on my wrist than using a mouse or keyboard or whatnot.
Now, see, you're an artist and you draw. Like, I type all day, and then when I go to play video games, it's often, I guess it's like the same motion of kind of squeezing your fingers. So there is no relief in video games. There is no balm in Gilead for this sad man. But that's,
so yeah, so that's like a day or two off, and then
and then it's right back at it.
Yeah.
Right back at the drawing board.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about The Better to Find You With, now that we have discussed video games. And look,
yeah,
anytime, off air, we will Matt and I will provide you with as many 5-year-old video game recommendations as you want.
Okay, cool.
So let's talk about The Better to Find You With. Now, you described this on Twitter as being a comic about future werewolves.
Yes. Okay, so it's like story number 2 for a series I'm going to like go back and forth with, like, whenever I have time, I'm going to try to do a story for this series called The City Between. They're all urban fantasy one-shots that take place in a futuristic setting. So it's kind of how Discworld you can read in any order. The idea is that you can read any of the City Between stories in any order. So the first one was Fame and Misfortune, which is a bodyguard with magic powers protecting a spoiled celebrity. And then this new one is a veterinarian and a werewolf are trying to find a new werewolf before a werewolf hunter does.
And that is in the future.
Yes, it's in a small town futuristic setting.
So what?
So the park ranger has a hover car.
Okay, like I was going to ask you, like, how much does that, like, pushing it into the future? Because aesthetically, like, what I've read of Fame and Misfortune, you know, looks very contemporary. Like, the future stuff isn't quite, you know, it's not like a Transmetropolitan, really,
yeah,
where it's all, like, immediately cyberpunk. Like, you're not doing a Shadowrun campaign.
No, it is a future where there are no cars except for law enforcement. And the joke to follow up the no cars statement is that horses have gone extinct.
Are those the only two changes?
No, so it's just, like, a lot of, like, little things. Like, in Fame and Misfortune, there's a part where one of the main characters, Marnie, is going into her apartment, and she like, stops to tap on a screen that's on the wall, and that's basically her finding out if she has any physical mail, rather than the boxes being waiting for her or whatnot. And so it's a lot of tinier world-building stuff. And, like, the city is built with all those, like, support beam pipes. It doesn't come up in Fame and Misfortune, but that's basically the city's plumbing, and they glow in the dark. But it was hard to show that in Fame and Misfortune since it's a black and white book.
It's very hard to show glowing in the dark.
Yeah.
It's a black and white comic. Does that kind of world-building stuff, is that something that you kind of have meticulously planned out? Like, because I know that you're doing a series of these. You've mentioned, you know, Fame and Misfortune and The Better to Find You With are both part of the City Between. Did you kind of sit down and figure out how that world works? Or is it just something that you, like, when you find an opportunity to work a little bit of something into the comic as you're going, that you'll put it in?
So I made up that basically the buildings are a lot bigger in Fame and Misfortune. So, like, there are sidewalks on every few stories because the buildings get so tall. So there's a scene where, like, Rebecca, the main character of Fame and Misfortune, jumps from one little sidewalk area to the next one down. And so I haven't decided how tall those get, But it's basically that part of the reason there's no cars is because the bottom is not really in sight, unless you are really, really poor.
That tends to be how it goes.
Yeah.
In your dystopia.
Yeah. But so since it's like urban fantasy, the fact that the buildings are so tall work in the vampire's favor, because obviously on the bottom, like, two or three levels, sunlight's not going to get down there all that much. So a lot of vampires will be living in the lower levels.
Now, the last time that we had you on the show, actually, I don't know if this was the last time we had you on the show or if it was just when we were hanging out getting frozen yogurt in San Diego, we talked a lot about werewolves.
I know that last time I was on the show, we talked a lot about urban fantasy in general. I think that werewolves was just specific to Gettin' Froyo.
Werewolves and Gettin' Froyo, the perfect combination. You were there for the frozen yogurt argument.
Yeah.
So you've got vampires, you've got werewolves. Is there anything that, like, in the kind of roster of fantasy monsters where you're like, no, not this. I am not going this far.
So basically I figured out where every single, like, fantasy creature I'm using got their powers, and that determines which parts of the pop culture mythology to use and which parts not to use. So some of the stuff that I don't use, it's not because I'm against it, it's more just like I don't think it fits in the way I've structured everything.
Like what? Like what is an example of that?
There's no, like, leprechauns. That was what popped into my head. Because that's always the joke on Buffy, that leprechauns aren't real. Everything else is real, but leprechauns aren't. When someone says a demon in their world, they aren't necessarily connected to hell. So there's no, like, heaven or hell established type things in this.
Vampires, for instance, because, you know, I'm a Dracula guy.
Yes,
I'm a fan.
You're a Dracula aficionado. I'm also Dracula expert.
I have been. You had a show about Draculas that I got yelled at for being on because I did not know as much about Castlevania as I thought I did. And someone was very angry with me over that. So how, like, for example, how do your vampires work? Because it seems like this is something that I am kind of, you know, I am intrigued by, and I have done it in stuff that I've written. But every time I read a comic with vampires, and Garth Ennis has done this three separate times, but he's been like, okay, no, vampires don't work like you think. They work like this. And it's like, okay, he's done it three different ways.
So the characters never, like, come out and say it. And in both Fame and Misfortune and The Better to Find You With, there aren't any vampires yet. Because I'm trying to, like, introduce one thing at a time. So I have outlined and halfway written the story that comes after The Better to Find You With. That one's called The Dead Deception, and it's a basically noir murder mystery where the perpetrator is a vampire that doesn't know they're a vampire.
Okay.
And so the hints like that is that, like, they wake up that they're hungry, and then they go into, like, a 7-Eleven and eat a bunch of junk food, not knowing that that's not why they're hungry. And then they push over the cashier, and he cracks his head open, and then they drink the blood. But the cops aren't going to see that part, because that part's going to be, like, off the security camera, so the cops don't know what they're looking for. So, basically, the blood-drinking stuff is there. The hurt-by-sunlight part is there, because they're powered by some severe dark magic, which doesn't get along with daylight. And the reverse is true. If you're using a lot of light magic, it's harder to do at nighttime. So basically, they're a dead body that is powered by dark magic, but the dark magic is keeping everything working the way the person remembers it working.
So if you have a limp, you will have a limp as a vampire.
Yes.
That is a raw deal. Kill.
Right. But they do get, like, super strength and super speed the more people they kill. So eventually they'll probably figure out that limp is all in their head.
I do like the idea of someone, like, limping around at super speed. Kind of wobbly like doing all the interview with a vampire super speed stuff all wobbly.
So it's basically they'll need glasses until it occurs to them that they shouldn't need glasses.
So is it a look? I'm asking a lot of questions about vampires. If we should have you back on in October to explain this.
All right.
But I'm curious about your world building. How did you come to all those conclusions? Like, what were the... Because, you know, you talked about different areas of pop culture influencing you. And, you know, obviously, I've talked to you about this stuff before. You know, the different interpretations that you get of the vampires in general and Dracula in particular are something you and I have had a conversation about and how interested I think we both are in that. But Where do you, like... How do you sift things out? Like, what do you look for inspiration? And
well, so basically, since the whole general appeal of like the sitting between is fairly agnostic, and I didn't want to come down on any like religious stuff one way or the other, so that throws crosses out. But then they hurt if the person holding the cross believes beyond any doubt that it will work. So they probably aren't going to work. Because a lot of the way the magic works in general is more, do you believe that it works, than it works.
So there's, like, that's something that I'm often interested in as well. Like, the, I think it might have been in a big thing in the Dresden Files books, which is something that we've also talked about.
Yes.
Where it's, you know, the idea of magic being just will made manifest. Right. Is something that I'm really interested in.
Right. And I kind of like, a big reason why a lot of people told me to read the Dresden Files is because that stuff comes up in Sorcery 101 as well. A lot of
it wasn't for the 100% accurate depictions of Chicago? If you have not read those books, listeners, they do not have very accurate depictions of Chicago.
They get better accurate depictions of Chicago as it goes on.
They do, as they go on.
And accurate enough that a police asked him how he figured... There's an interview with Jim Butcher where apparently he talks about a police officer in Chicago asking him, so how'd you figure out what angle the sniper would be, where the sniper would be to shoot this guy in this one scene? Because we try to, you know, keep a lid on that sort of information. And Jim Butcher's response is, well, I got on Google Maps and then figured out where he would have to be to get a clear shot.
I actually just saw, I think it was a post on Tumblr, where somebody was talking about there was a resource that combed through like crime reports and police blotters and stuff to figure out things that writers would need to know that they could get in trouble for asking about. So it's like, you know, like how much does a gram of cocaine really cost? How much does it cost to hire a hitman? Like all that stuff. Like you can go look at this and it's just like, yep, this is just from the news. This is from the papers.
But yeah, so it's a lot of the magic stuff just in the city between is more will made manifest sort of deal. And then the vampires are just powered by dark magic rather than light magic, which is why they're sensitive to sunlight. So I actually also, for every creature that's powered by dark magic, have one that's supposed to be the opposite balance of it. So there's like nymphs in it that are basically have solar powered magic. So while they're not hurt by nighttime, they're pretty useless.
So what are they the anti-vampires?
Yeah, basically. Because they live forever until you kill them, and their magic is solar-powered and whatnot, so...
What are the anti-werewolves?
So, that one is... I'm still figuring out the details, too. So, for now, I don't need them.
Knee-jerk reaction? Anti-werewolves are mermaids.
You know, that makes a staggering amount of sense, Matt.
So, basically, the way werewolves work is that there are animal demons, and they were getting killed off by people, like, ages and ages ago, and then they just figured out a ritual to turn a person into an animal demon. Werewolf is just someone who is sort of possessed by a wolf demon.
So, do you, in the world of The City Between, do you subscribe to the notion that there are also where rats and where tigers and where cheetahs and where Sonic the Hedgehogs.
There are four, and it is how common they are based on how quickly that animal goes to biting in a fight. So werewolves are the most common. Second most common
is Matt Wilson, he will, at the drop of a hat.
I fight dirty. It's true.
So then the second most common would be something that's a werepanther-type cat creature. And then there are, like, hawks, and then there are snakes. And then the snakes are the least common because their bite's also poisonous, so you're probably not going to live through getting bit.
Right. So you have your wolfmans, your hawkmans, your serpentors.
Yeah.
And your panthers.
Yeah.
That's good. Now, like, do people make fun of the hawkmans?
No, because I haven't had one in the comics yet. So, like I said, I'm going to introduce one at a time, so I'm not overwhelming anyone. Well, but
so you're giving, like, that's an interesting thing about you, because, like, I've talked about your work ethic before, and you have. You know, I think last time you were on the show, we talked about how you've got a system in place where you have something new on the table every calendar year.
Yep.
For the people who, you know, bought your stuff at the last convention, they come up and they're like, oh, I like this. Here's the new thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like part of that, like talking to you about this, I don't think I would be able to resist the temptation. And if people have read any of my comics, they know this is true. Like, I have a real hard time holding stuff back.
I try to be merciless when writing, because if it doesn't matter, it's going to just bog down the 80-page short. So part of this, like, world-building stuff is, while I'm not going to use it in maybe the story I'm working on right this second, that might be, like, well, I'll just make the next story about this little thing. So that helps, like, especially in a short like this, that it could very easily get bogged down with all this stuff that I'm telling you about when it comes to, like, magical world building.
So you've got The Better to Find You With is currently on Kickstarter. People can get to that from your website at sorcery101.net.
Yes.
And there's a preview on there as well that people can read to find out what the book is all about and get a little sample of it. You've also been doing, for a while, Misfits of Avalon, which is your what if magical girls were shitty teens.
Right. Book. They're magical girls that are jerks.
Which is a great premise.
Oh, thank you.
Because I think the thing that is readily apparent when you're reading it, but that nobody in the book realizes at the start, is that they're the bad guys.
Yeah.
They just think they're being selected for their, you know, moon destinies or whatever.
They're the bad guys, yeah. They're the sort of bad guys.
And that is coming from Dark Horse, correct?
Yes. The second book is going online now. The first book is out already. The second book will come out in March. But I'm doing a page a day online until it comes out.
Yeah, so there's a lot up there for people who are curious to check that stuff out. You're also going to be doing conventions. Sadly, you're not going to be at HeroesCon this year. I keep telling you to come out, but I know that's a long way from the West Coast.
Yeah, and then the one time I did do Heroes, I didn't sell very well. So,
well, look, but you get to hang out with me and Matt. Like, that's better than making money, right?
I'm really poor, and that's why I go to conventions, to make money.
So where can people come see you if they want to make sure that you have a successful con by picking?
Well, I'll be at San Diego Comic-Con. That's my next one. Then after San Diego, I will be at Rose City Comic-Con, and then at TapatoCon, which is brand new. It's basically the folks that run Topotico, who handle merchandise for a lot of webcomic people, are throwing their own convention this year.
That is a really good idea.
Yeah.
So that's on the East Coast. You guys should come to that.
Where is that?
It's in Massachusetts, Western Massachusetts.
You know, I've always wanted to go to Massachusetts. Matt, so we could road trip.
Yeah.
We could end our friendship with a drive up to Massachusetts.
Well, before we negotiate that, Chris, I think we need to kick it over at this point to our listeners on Twitter who have some questions for Kel.
That is true. Now, Matt, if the listeners want to get in on these interviews that we do every week, how exactly can they go about that?
They're going to have to pick a side in the War of the Opposites between werewolves and mermaids. Whose side are you on, everybody? The werewolves or the mermaids?
It depends. I think who's going to win is going to depend entirely on whether or not the fight is on land or water.
You talking about how this is a venue issue?
Yeah.
Then, once they pick their side, they should go to twitter.com, sign up for an account, either make their account a mermaid supporter or werewolf supporter, tweet all day and all night about how you support the mermaids, you think their cause is righteous, or you support the werewolves and you think they're misunderstood, and then wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and that is when one of us, either Chris or myself, will put out the call for questions for our guest. You can stop your werewolf and mermaid tweeting for a moment to ask a question of our guest, like the ones you are about to hear. And the first one I have here is from Lost Limey on Twitter, who asks, what's your favorite and least favorite approach to a magic system in fiction?
I don't really have it's less about the system. I think the system doesn't matter. And it's how the person gets the story gets across that system working. Because I'm going to tell you right now, I do not like Brendan Sanderson's books because they read like D&D manuals for whatever system he made up that week. And
so you're saying don't get bogged down in the system. Just make it something that keeps the story going.
Don't explain it to me. Just have it like you know how it works and just don't contradict it in the story and people will pick up on it.
Fair enough. The next question is from Soren Amaru on Twitter. This is for all of us. His question is, what are some of your favorite European comics?
This is hard because I like a lot of European comics for the art, and then I don't know what the story actually is. And I have learned that a lot of my favorite comic book artists in European comics are maybe not very good writers. Because I really love P.R. Allery's artwork, and I like just how he does lines, and he's this beautiful comic, Belladonna, that's kind of has like a Three Musketeer vibe, but like the main character is a lady, so it's a lot of fun to look at. Yeah, I have
that,
no
that
idea
is about Gambit's
what's going
wife,
on.
Right?
Yeah, clearly it's about Gambit's wife. And then the same artist did an adaptation of Sinbad. And that's also beautiful to look at. So I can't really answer because I don't know what the stories are about.
If there's one thing that's beautiful to look at, it's art of a comedian in a windbreaker with a mustache on stage giving his all. Chris, do you have any favorites among European comics?
Assuming this is continental Europe and not Judge Dredd, which would kind of be my go-to. I'm actually a big fan of Black Sad, which I don't think we've ever talked about on the show, which is a Spanish comic from Juan Diaz Canales and Juanjo Guarnido, I think, perhaps, that was published in France and brought over to America by Dark Horse. And it is a if you have not read it, Matt, I think you would really like it. It's
okay.
It's a big noir story. It's all private
detective. It's what stuff. If Batman was a cat?
Yeah, it's what if Batman was a cat. and there's a really great there's a bit about racism in it, and it's literally like white animals versus black
there's
animals.
Black animals.
So it's like, and Black Sad is a black cat. And so it's like polar bears, like saying racist things to a black cat, which sounds like it would be terrible.
It's like the polar bear gets framed for being a pedophile. That's important.
Yeah, like they are like super crime story-ish, but I really like those. Obviously, I'm also a big fan of the non-racist Tintin stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think people forget this, but a lot of the Donald Duck stories, even Don Rosa stuff, those were made for European markets before they were brought over to America. Like, those were made for Italy and Norway and Belgium. So I obviously am a big fan of those as well. Matt, what about you?
The recent announcement that the Corto Maltese comics are being officially translated into English and released is very excited to me, because that stuff is the shit. It looks
great. Yeah, I've
got
the first volume of that. It's really good.
Yeah. So that's my answer to that.
I would love to read that, because that's one of those ones that I thought was really pretty, but I was like, I don't know if this story's any good because I can't read what people are saying.
Yeah. Okay, the next one is from Felt LeGrand, who I don't believe is a native English speaker, but it makes this question hilarious. What's your beloved educational comics?
Listen, wherever he is from, he's getting by in English way better than I would be getting by in his language.
That's true.
An amazing phrasing.
It just makes it sound like he's a supervillain. But I think what he's asking is, what are some educational comics that you like?
I can't think of any educational comics that strike me as great. I guess Howtoons by Nick Trigoda. Those are cute. They're like instructions on how to make like toys and stuff out of household objects. Like, there's instructions on how to make a quote-unquote marshmallow gun.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and the latest volume of that was a Fred Van Lente, Tom Fowler joint as well.
And speaking of Fred Van Lente, Action Philosophers is very good. And a comic that I really liked from a couple years ago is a graphic novel, which is more, I guess, reportage than it's straight on educational, but there's a lot I learned in it, called The Influencing Machine, about the history of media, is really good. So that's a few. Okay, this is from Tales to Enrage on Twitter. And, Kel, we've talked about your love for Gambit in the past.
Yes.
Your comics are not superhero comics, but you have an affinity, certainly, for certain characters. Greg Black asks, what superhero character is your least favorite, and do you have a pitch to redeem them?
I don't know. It's basically, I'm kind of tired of superheroes. I'm worn out on a lot of them, because I just want superheroes to be funny. And any single, like, superhero that I don't like, it's usually because they're very, very serious. So I can't think of any one in particular. It's more just stop all this dumb, grim, dark, super serious, no one can laugh bullshit.
I would agree with that.
Agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Full agreement here. All right, the last one is going to come from Arthur Wyatt. This is our last listener question.
That dude does some good European comics.
He sure does. The question is, what's your favorite folkloric villain, and who would you like to see that folkloric villain drawn by? So this wouldn't be like a class of monsters. This would be a specific villain from folklore.
I don't know. There's a lot of folklore out there. I should have looked at these questions ahead of time and thought of answers. I don't know. I'm passing on this question.
You're passing on? You can't pass on the last question.
I'm sorry. I just don't know what to do.
Let's say Baba Yaga. Okay.
Baba Yaga, always a good one.
Our guest has been Kel McDonald. Kel, before we let you go, we've talked about some of the places where people can grab your comics, but tell our listeners some other places where they can find you on the internet.
Well, I'm at KelMcDonald.com is basically the same website as Sorcery101.net. You can also find me at KelMcDonald.tumblr.com. My Twitter is Kelhound, KELLHOUND, so you can chat me up there. And then you should go back my Kickstarter right now.
Yes, you should. And we will have a link to that in the show notes as well. But you can obviously find that by going to Kel's website and checking her out on Twitter. Kel, thank you so much for joining us for the show and talking to us about Skyrim. When you finally get into Fallout in 3 or 4 years, give us a call. We'll talk about it.
All right. I'll do that.
Thank you once again to Kel McDonald. Definitely check out her Kickstarter for The Better to Find You With. And right now, I think it's time that Matt and I answer a few questions from listeners. This is our bi-weekly listener questions segment.
That's right. And this is a question from someone who's asked us quite a few. Aliams, possibly. They ask, if Kisaragi Gintaru and Dick Grayson had a friendship contest, who would win between them?
First of all, what is a friendship contest? Second of all, like, they would both win, because you always win when you make friends. And they would make friends with each other. Now, for those of you who don't know who Kisaragi Gintaro is, he's the main character of Kamen Rider Forze, whose goal is to become friends with everyone, up to and including an orbital weapons platform, which he does. And Dick Grayson, obviously, his superpower is that he is super friendly and super cares about everyone. So those two would go pretty well together, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they would compete. I think they would just decide to be friends. This is an anonymous question. Is there a really good comic where Superman fights Darkseid? Outside of the animated series, I don't think Superman versus the Space Devil has really lived up to the hype. Now, are we including Final Crisis in that?
Yeah, but, like, Final Crisis almost doesn't count.
Yeah.
Like, it almost doesn't count. Because, like, the focus on that is not Superman versus Darkseid. I remember being really excited, you know, the Superman 2000 relaunch that had the Jeff Loeb, Joe Kelly stuff in it. There was a big Superman versus Darkseid fight there, but it literally just amounted to Superman punching Darkseid in the face a bunch. And, like, Darkseid had his eyes swelled shut, so he couldn't use his Omega Beams. Which, you know, is probably pretty satisfying for Superman, but not very satisfying as a reader. I honestly don't know if there has been. I might be just missing one, but it's one of those reasons that I think Darkseid is so problematic as a villain. You know, it's hard to get to the end of that story, because the way Superman beats Darkseid is by inspiring people to be better people, which is kind of what he does in Final Crisis, and that's kind of not the action-oriented solution that we need. As comics readers, or that we want as comics readers, I should say.
Yeah, it's a weird conundrum.
I mean, that said, like, I do think that, like, the stuff that happens in Superman the Animated Series and the stuff that happens in a Justice League Unlimited, that's, like, really good Darkseid stuff. But, like, I can't think of a comic that's pulled it off that well. Although, you know, I do like Final Crisis a lot.
All right, our next question is from Crooked Knight, who asks, what is Ben Grimm's best nickname?
Ooh, okay, so what do we have? We've got Aunt Petunia's favorite nephew.
Yeah, the blue-eyed idol of millions.
Blue-eyed idol of millions. The ever-loving blue-eyed thing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Old Knucklehead.
Shellhead.
The web-slinger. Shellhead. Winghead.
So many Marvel characters are something head.
They got a lot of, like, like, look, you can just imagine Stan Lee sitting at his desk looking at this thing going, he got webs on his head.
Hey, the Wolverine's the old Knucklehead over there.
I don't think Stan had a hand in that one, but
yeah. I think it's the blue-eyed idol of millions. That's my
blue-eyed idol
one.
Of millions is, like, because the thing is, he's saying it to be self-deprecating, but it's completely true.
Yeah.
Like, he really is the blue-eyed idol of millions.
All right, one last question. This is from AJR82, who asks, what are some comics quotes or phrases you use most often in your daily life? For me, since Akewood, I always find myself referring to really dark comedy as working some rough chuckles.
Okay, what percentage of your day-to-day interactions do you think are at least flavored by Akewood?
I'd say a good many.
Yeah, like, I mean, I would say, like, maybe, like, at least 40% of my day-to-day.
I caught myself saying something hundo to my mom the other day. I think I said my car insurance bill was $400.
I say rough chuckles a lot. That is one that I say. There's so many just from Akewood.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think of other comics lines.
I know when I'm feeling down, sometimes I'll say I got depression, or I'm the guy with depression.
I'm the guy who sucks. Also, I got depression. That's an applicable one. One that I was saying to Chad the other day, like I was talking about how I needed to do something differently. You know, I needed to change something. And I told him that I was going to go into the Thogol cave and have the Ten-Eyed Man cut the fear out of me. It's a very specific reference.
Very specific.
He responded with an even more specific reference, which he just said, yeah, sometimes you got to turn off the ninja. Now, for those of you who don't know, there is a G.I. Joe arc in the Devil's Due era where Snake Eyes gets brainwashed by an Arashikage brainwashing technique. And when he comes back, they put him in like a simulator and, you know, to run him through his paces to make sure he's okay. And like, they're watching him do all this stuff and he turns around and you think he's going to pull out a sword, and instead he has an Uzi. And Scarlet's like, did you see that? He's not using any of his ninja training. He's only using his commando training. Like, that is something you can do. So yeah, turning off the ninja, only using the commando. That's one that I've said a lot.
One that I want to bring back and start saying all the time is Great Caesar's Ghost.
you should do it, man. Bring it back.
Yeah, I should
Blue
do
blazes,
it.
Blazes, man. You should bring that back.
Oh, God's blood.
Wow, you went real old school.
All right. That's our question segment. If you would like to send us a question to read during this segment on the show, you can do that on Tumblr at warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com, or you can do it via email at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That email address is also where you can send us every story ever and Word Heavyweight Champions lists. It's where you can send listener questions if you'd like. It's where you can sponsor the show if you like. If you'd like to contact us about that. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, read show notes, download the show, and leave comments. And check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more good reviews we get, the more we are featured there, which is great for us. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. And you will find links to all my stuff, including the digital versions of Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective, for which the print edition is right now being kickstarted on Kickstarter. Go help us out if you can. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to everything that I do, including, you know, Twitter, Tumblr, comics, and comicsology, at about.me/ChrisSims. Obviously, X-Men 92, number one is out now. Number two will be out on Wednesday. And also this Wednesday, the long-awaited Radical Guardian Skater X number two, which is the comic that I do with Joe Hunter and Josh Kroc. It is because we are the only people who would dare to do it. It's a Christmas issue released in the middle of summer. So definitely check that out. That'll be 16 pages for only 99 cents of your hard-earned money. Thank you for reading my comics, reading Matt's comics, listening and supporting the show. And we will be back next week with another great guest. We're very excited about him. We might have to do some reading to talk to our next guest. So look forward to that. And we will see you next week, everybody.
Yeah!